This is Holden Village, and I'm Diane Shiner, co-director of the Village from 2000 to 2005. This is July 2004, and I have looked forward for several years to a chance to interview Gertrude Lundholm, who has been coming to the Village for many years. I think captures and holds the spirit of Holden, and just wanted a chance to ask for some of your stories, Gertrude, and some of your views of what has changed and what's the same, what are the challenges over the years. And it's also a pleasure to have both Christiana Lundholm and Nick Lundholm, Gertrude's grandchildren, are in the Village this year on our long-term staff. So there's a real sense of coming full circle from generation to generation to generation. So Gertrude, I would hope that maybe you could just start out just a little bit of your history. How did you come to Holden in the first place, and what kept you coming back?
Okay, my husband, Bruno Lundholm, was a musician and head of the music department at Augustana for many years, taught piano and organ, also was an organist and choir director in one of the oldest churches in our area, like 150 years ago. And he and I got acquainted in college years. I sang in his church choir. I was a member of the college choir, and he was an accompanist. So when we went on tours is when I really got to know him. He was the eligible bachelor on campus at the time. And it wasn't until we got to Chicago, and we sang in orchestra hall, and he asked me to save the night in Chicago for him. So we went to the Palmer House, and these are embarrassing stories for some of us. We went to the Palmer House to eat. I didn't take any purse with me. I ended up having to go to the bathroom, toilet, and women had to pay in those years. I had to go back and ask him, the professor, for money to use the restroom. That was the first embarrassing thing, but... And the kids got so excited about that on the tour, they took up a collection for me after that. So I would have money with me if such emergencies arose. Another thing that happened on those tours, we often stopped at places that were big, but the women had to pay to go to the bathroom. And because I'm short, they would hold me up, and I would reach over and unlock all the doors. That was the beginning of my college years.
And the beginning of your romance.
Well, sort of, yeah, but except he wasn't serious for any of that. And we didn't date seriously, you know. I mean, it took quite a while. I was through college, but I did sing in his church choir, and he'd invite me out to eat lunch and stuff with him. Well, after we got married, I mean, he had went in the service and was overseas. We got engaged before he went, and when he came home, then in November, we got married in December. And December of 44? Yeah, we were married in 45. And we still did this often. We went to workshops where they had camp, and he was often the music person. So we were used to going around to these youth camps, and he would be the music director. And then we read about Holden in the Lutheran Companion. And we'd been to so many in Michigan, Wisconsin, and so forth. We said, wouldn't it be nice to go out there and see what it's like? So we wrote and asked about Holden. And we said, can you use us? And they answered right away and said, come. So we came the very next year. This was in 63. And it was before the whole present Holden program had started. At that time, it was the youth groups from the three synods, ALC, Missouri, and LCA. And they came 30 students at a time from those synods. And they were the ones who came here as forerunners and so forth. Washed the place, the windows. We all worked at that. I mean, there wasn't even cardboard that you could put up, cover up things and so forth. So we got used to it. You didn't have these things. You made do with what was here. That lasted for about 3 years. And the board at that time, and it was people like Vern Rieke was on and Erman Lunder from the Bible Institute who had gotten this place in the first place. What are we going to do with it? And they finally went around, and the three synods were here for the 3 years, and we helped out with what was here, and my husband did the music. We had Bible study and so forth. And Elmer Witt, Carol Hindley, and Wilton Bergstrand were the youth leaders. And the board finally went around and decided to interview the youth leaders and say, what do you think be good for Holden? It's so remote, it's going to be hard to bring these groups out over them. And it was Carol Hindley who had the idea, let's put families back together. We've separated families, let's put them back together in all generations. And we'll run it by volunteers. And so that's the whole spirit of the volunteers. Nobody got paid here except the director first, and the businessmen. And that lasted for a long time. And it was a real emphasis with everybody that came to work. Would not get any income, but your pay here, you'll be Berman board, but your pay here is to go to sessions. And through the years, we heard more students come and say, I've learned more here in 3 weeks than in one semester. Mm-hmm. You know, you realize how, and if you are working and you want to go hear somebody, you trade with somebody and say, well, you, I want to go hear this person. Will you do my job and I'll do yours? So that's how that sort of system began. So it was mostly through volunteers and people who were really into this. Carol also emphasized, go where you can. Take a leap of faith. I don't care if you're employed, you have a job, you don't, can't afford to go there. Take that leap of faith while you can still walk. You may be disabled by the time you retire. So it was a real emphasis to make people aware. Do that. Borrow money if you have to. And he emphasized, he went with his children too. Took them off. And I told that to Bill Coyle that comes here. Mm-hmm. I asked him one time because I told him my dad died before I was born. But apparently he got through to my mother. See that they get an education and travel. Those are two gifts nobody can ever take away from you. You share it all with you, but you always have it. It's just like love. You give it away, but you have it. That was real impressive to Bill and his wife. So he worked for Delta Airlines, and he was a pilot. And I said, could you leave your job and go back, take your family and go on this trip? He said, yeah, I think so. It's worth that risk. Mm-hmm. So they went home and did this, and I got pictures of them when they went on this world tour in the plane. I mean, they've been back here every year since. But they caught the idea of it. Mm-hmm. And so this has sort of gone through, and I emphasize that a lot. Take the trip while you're able. You get like me, like I am now. You can't do that while you're here. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's important. It's worth, drop your job for a while, but see if somebody can cover it. After I'd been here, I did a series of sevens. That's the Jubilee time, you know, work seven. So I said, if you know that's the way we should do it, we could alter society in this. I said, work 6 days hard. You're saving money. The seventh year you take off. Mm-hmm. And if you had eight people for seven jobs, one person can always take off. They still be placed in the community. Mm-hmm. We don't run business like that, but you could. Mm-hmm. And I think it would do a lot for economy. Every family would have an advantage of this. Take off a year and see what happens. Mm-hmm. You do that in transition of jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, many things to experiment with, that kind of thing.
So you have come for 43 years every year.
Right, 41, so, yes.
41?
Yeah, we started in 63, so it's 41 years.
Okay.
Right.
And so you've seen Holden over a long period of time.
Right.
And you know, what has brought you back? You know, every single year, and just say a little bit about some of the things that you see has changed and some of the things that have kind of remained the same in terms of those early spirit.
Well, the reason I find it, you know, it's worth coming back to, it's a renewal here, no matter what year. You can be in groups at church that are meaningful too, but Holden is fresh and alive all the time and keeps up with what are the current issues. You go here and talk freely about it. And this was Carol Hindley's idea. We open this up for conversation. You don't have to be changed while you're here. We handle a lot of controversial things here. Did from the very beginning. We talk about it here. Nobody's going to put pressure on you to change it. This is impressive because lots of places you go, they want you to change and become something else. Mm-hmm. Carol's idea was you don't have to change a peer. And one of the things that impressed me is the motto in the bus, where the ride up is cheap, but the ride down is costly. And even the boat people noticed that people who came here were somehow different when they went out. They didn't have to talk about it. Something that happened up here. Mm-hmm. And they got curious, too. You know, what did they do up there? Well, you can't really explain it. And one of the first philosophers was Horty Kretzmann. He said, if you could explain this place, it'd spoil it. Mm-hmm. It's just a surprise to everybody. But that motto in the bus has really stayed with me through the years. And we used to stay at the Parkway in Chelan. And she said, people steal from our motel. And she said, they learned to trust the people from Holden. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, people took toasters and, you know, whatever was handed. Rob, I can trust the people from Holden. And that's gone ever since. Mm-hmm. So this is why I always stayed with them. Knew I had a ride. Come and meet me. And we drove out for many years, of course. And we brought the family out here. And the first year we came out was in 63. And our boys were not old enough to be on staff. Peter was 14 or 15, and Mark a year younger. And Martha, my daughter, was 9. So Beanie was 51 when we came, and I was 45. Mm-hmm. You know, we're like the middle-aged people. And so our kids had a place, and we all loved it, you know, what was here. And we took advantage of the hikes and swimming. But I heard many people say, boy, have I learned a lot in that place. Well, that's the renewal I feel every year I come. People at home still ask, how come you're going again? And I said, but it is new all the time. You come home, you know, I've changed too in lots of ways. In what I think and what I believe.
Give an example of a way that you think you've changed because of coming to Holden.
Well, you see business people that come up here and say, I don't understand this place. People that run a restaurant someplace else and say, I hire people and they never, you know, all these people come to work for nothing. Where else does it happen? You can't name any. And I think the less you have, and we didn't stress stuff. We all lived very simply in the chalets. We got as much as we could from the miners' village. This is why we moved stuff from there that was, they burned them down that first year. But things were out there that we could take back here. And we learned that the miners were here, they had to leave in a hurry. Many of them didn't believe that, but they left clothes hanging on the line and food around, and we had to dispose of that. But we went out there and took what we could use. And that's what we had in the chalets. Well, we were assigned, when we came, we were given it, the registrar's office was in Narnia. And Gilbert was already here. He was the businessman who would put money in this place. And so he was sort of the mayor, that's what they called him here. And he wanted to make a resort out of this. Well, the rest of them didn't want that, but he'd put money in here. So we still appreciate Gilbert and what he did and helped put money in here to get the thing cleaned up and ready to go. And so we really had two directors then. So, and Gilbert, you come here to work, you're going to have a broom in your hand if you see him coming. You know, that kind of a threat over you. Anyway, we were given a choice to live in a chalet with either a fireplace or hot water. And we had children, which we thought, well, you can get warm in hot water for cold. We'll take the tub. And it ended up that every place there was a fireplace is where the sessions were held, because we had no heat in the Koinonia. I mean, the Koinonia wasn't even there. So we were kind of glad we took what we did, because we didn't have, we had to keep the kids quiet if the sessions were going. Didn't have to in ours. Also, one of the delights was for the kids, delight for the kids that water ran down in the gutter from the top all the time. And Beanie and I were sitting on the porch one day, and people walked by and they stared so at us. So we finally said, do you want to come in? And they said, yes, we used to live here. And they had several children. So they came in and it was all still there. The sandbox was out back, the clothesline was there. They went upstairs and saw the wallpaper was still on the wall. We hadn't changed any of that. And we decided from that, it's not ours, we should open it up to anybody who comes. So that's how the morning coffees started, hospitality of open your house. And I still think that's a good idea. Your bedroom is your privacy. The rest of the house is for everybody. And we had 9 people living in that chalet at one time. Well, they all knew where a bathroom was. If it got available there, you went someplace else, in the Mojo Lodge or someplace. But it worked to have that many people in the house. But still open it up. And so this is where the Sunday coffee started. And you made it very simply. But my first serving table was, we had a lot of boards and benches. You know, you didn't have stuff to use. But we, the forestry people were here. And so I asked them if they'd save me the big wheel table. So that was my first table, serving table. And I used it all those years. You know, not anything fancy, but it's big. And the tablecloth that I'm working on, that I had you sign last year.
Yes.
I've tried to put all their names on, the people mm-hmm. that were here in those early years.
Mm-hmm.
Put their name down. So, and that's going to go in the museum if I ever get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the people that were here at the beginning. Staff, faculty, teaching staff, yes. and so forth. And another reason it stayed interesting was the faculty came from all over the country, the different schools and universities, which gave you new ideas all the time.
Say a little bit about some of the people that you really remember from teaching sessions or preaching, or who stands out for you.
Well, one of the stories I told her last night was Norman Hobbo came in here. By the way, he's on that new study book from the World Council of Churches of Canada. It's mm-hmm. his article's in there on Revelations along with Barb Rossing.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and bought another book yesterday. I'm going to give it to her when Peter comes out in the fall, because I don't want to mail another one. But, I mean, it's tremendous, and it has all articles on Revelation by Norm Hobbo and Barbara Rossi. So I think I want that study book, mm-hmm. and it's on sale right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought that. She's going to see it gets home with Peter when he comes out, and I'll have it back again. But I find it very helpful. It's mm-hmm. Barbara Rossi. Well, Norm Hobbo was here, and we didn't know him at all. But he had been in Australia for one thing, I think, and he was the one who did Sunday School series of the Purple Puzzle,
mm-hmm.
very, very popular. And they have, you have copies mm-hmm. of the first one, and now they are printing it again, I guess. But for a long time they stopped, but that was wonderful. Well, the first day he came in here, he came into the dining hall, and he said, I'm looking for a whore. He thought, who is this? And Rosemary Ruther was here at the same time. The thing was, Norm was putting on a play, and I forget the title of it, but my son Mark was in it, and he was looking for characters. This is why he came in and said what he did, but we had no idea. Who is this, who is this guy? Roland Bainton happened to be here at the same time, and he's the scholar, Luther scholar at Yale, and he was here, and very quiet, he's a Quaker, and he got sort of disturbed with Norm's services. It was very jazzy and loud. And so Norm had the evening services when he came. So it was like, how's my performance going? Roland Bainton was there, and that bothered him. He's Quaker in the first place. Then very next night, he said, we'll have a service of 20 minutes of silence. And we did. Just the contrast of what uh-huh. went on. I mean, you couldn't help but be interested.
Yes.
You know, that sort of thing has happened all the time. And people have such wonderful ideas, and it was all fields of literature, science, art, history, geology, mm-hmm. you know. And so the first thing it began, we didn't know who was coming the year we were here. And a lot of faculty didn't know, what is this place? And they didn't always show up. So the board decided, we've got to keep a core there. And if we can keep a theologian, a musician, and a scientist, we can fill in for anybody who doesn't come.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I've been here all these years. We weren't supposed to come more than 2 years in succession to keep it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But they kept Rudy Edmond here, who redid the whole mine business, cleaned mm-hmm. it up, and gave the money for the museum to start mm-hmm. with. My husband was a musician. Carol Hindley was a theologian. And we thought, we can fill in for anybody who doesn't show up. Mm-hmm. So you keep the program going all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason I've been lucky to be here all these years. And so my husband was a musician for a long time, and nobody came. He finally got people like Paul Motz to come.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I feel like John the Baptist. I finally got somebody to come that's good. You know, no, no, no. And so you met tremendous people like that through the years, and they kept coming back. And Carol Hindley was always alive. And if you didn't argue enough in a session, Carol would start to be the advocate and make it go going. You know, mm-hmm. he would take an office and win. He just had so much talent. And you remember everything, what he said, what he did. It was so unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not, I think he was, well, in the cemetery, I think they thought he was too radical. You know, but he fit in here.
Mm-hmm.
He had been in parishes and so forth. But everybody, they still remember what he said. I do too.
Mm-hmm.
It just stays with you. And he did not, insisted that we do not build a chapel here. He said, all of life is worship. We're not building a separate chapel. You should worship, praise God all day through. Your work, your play, worship. And that's what it's become. And that just stays with you. What is this unique place? And everybody's kind of surprised at that. And even the, I told you, even the boat people. Right. It happens up there. Nobody forces you to change or believe anything if you don't want to. And you can spend your whole time reading or hike.
So if you look back over the years, and you probably had some idea of, you know, some of the challenges and the hard things that Holden has faced, if you were to remember a story of a kind of a critical time in terms of struggling with the nature of Holden?
Well, getting funds.
Well, yes. Always that's
been.
Persistence.
Always been. Mm-hmm. You know, well, Carol went out a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a director here, but he realized it's important. And he was Norwegian, and he knew people that we didn't necessarily, you knew people, but not of another synod. He went to, and that's why we have a lot of Minnesota people here to begin mm-hmm. with, still do. Mm-hmm. They're loyal because they knew Carol, you know, he was AOC, so on. We always argue when it comes to May Day up here, the Swedes and the, we don't have the maple up here, do you?
No.
Well, we do otherwise. I mean, in other communities, mm-hmm. we have a maypole. But it just seemed like all the staff that began to come then were college students who were old enough to be here. And lots of people who came as a volunteer were in transition of another mm-hmm. job. Mm-hmm. They maybe didn't know what they were going to do, but they'd come here for a while and decide, I'm going to come out to the West Coast and be a nurse or a teacher. You know, part of that was the change that's occurring in your life. And you've come here with some new ideas like this. You know, women aren't just nurses and teachers anymore, homemakers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so many different things that you're involved in after having been here. And bringing in missionaries, you know, all this part of it. And there have been missionaries when we've been here. The Simonses have been here. The whole fishing project and the fish farming started at Holden. The science committee that's here to keep the environment going, they sent Meredith Olson, who's still over in Africa, in Tanzania, to a school out in Massachusetts where they were doing fish farming. Mm-hmm. She was a graduate, she was on staff, and she was a graduate in oceanography. So they sent, I mean, I remember Barbara Rossing, I thought, what are they doing that for? You know, whatever. But anyway, she went to this fishing school, started fish farming. She and her husband are the ones who started the fish farming in Africa. And that's to give the people a job where you can make yourself sustain, you know. Mm-hmm. She's still there.
Yes.
But all that, well, I got excited when that came, the brochures came out. I said, this started at Holden. We sent her off to the school where she learned all about fish farming, and that's what they do in Africa. Mm-hmm. Many of them that have been here, the Simonses were here and they were going back and retire. I mean, they couldn't get over what's here. Real supportive, and Holden has remained that way. And we have World Hunger Day. You know, where mm-hmm. else had we had World Hunger? Where you eat one food. I mean, we have suppers at our, and everybody brings a casserole. Mm-hmm. Something, you know, it isn't like a meal we have here, one food. Mm-hmm. I've also learned too that I'm now, my husband died 20 years ago. This is one place where I can come as a single person, a widow. I wouldn't go to a resort by myself. Mm-hmm. I feel very welcome here. Mm-hmm. And I tell everybody that. And they all feel the same ones, the ones I talk to. Mm-hmm. And come to Holden and feel welcome. I belong there. And your choices are yours. You can hike, you can read, you can write. You don't want to listen, you don't have to. But we try to get top stuff here. Instructors, professors, musicians, as much as possible.
Gertrude, say a little bit about some of the things that you personally have done. Like, I really don't know the story on Gertrude's shower that we point out to everybody down the road. And the nature walks. And you over the years really became a part of the teachers as well. So tell us a little bit about what all you've done.
Okay, we were living in Chalet 7, and when the Hinderleys came here, I had taken a course. I mean, there weren't very many places where you went for weaving. Mm-hmm. And I had taken a course at our college. So the Hinderleys said, we should have this at Holden. We knew one person on our faculty back in Illinois who had lived in Seattle and gave us a name. One person in all of Seattle did weaving and had this craft shop in her basement. So when Hinderleys said, we need this, and we went to that shop, we bought the loom, first loom, which is the clerk that's down here.
Yes.
And I had it up in the basement. One chalet that we're in is cement floor and built-in cupboards. And it was a perfect place to have a class. But I only had them in the afternoon because I thought people should go to sessions in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't offer crafts in the morning. And that turned out to be real good. It was cool down there, and I had places to store things. So I started out with children, and I said, that isn't really what I want to do, with Doris Edmond, who had the Narnia children. And that hadn't begun fully, you know. So it was sort of like, what are you going to do there? Well, when Hinderly said we should have crafts up there, I started this. And so it started in our basement of Chalet 7, and first of all, we just did sewing.
Mm-hmm.
And we embroidered the chambray shirts, which caught on all over the country. Mm-hmm. We never saw it anywhere else. So it began at Holland.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a girl that came from Denmark who had done a cross-stitch sewing. And she taught us how to do that. So then we got material and everybody could do cross-stitch sewing. So it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And my husband had music workshops. You know, we had to go out to get some money once in a while. So we went over to Seattle, and he had a workshop over there, and we were at a pastor's home, and he said, we've just been over to Sweden, and we brought this big loom. And he said, we're going to move now, and we don't know what to do with it, so we're going to give it to Holden. So we hauled the big loom that's in Koinonia on a truck and brought it back here. Well, none of us knew how to thread that big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we had it up in the balcony of Koinonia and had different people see if they could work it. I wrote letters to Sweden and said, give us some explanation. They said, the best thing to do is to come over here. Well, we didn't have it. But anyway, even the men helped with it.
Mm.
Well, and we didn't have materials, so we started with sheets that had gotten too ragged, denims, things that had gotten too ragged, so we decided to make shower mats for all the places. Well, even the men worked on them, and they liked them so well, they wanted to take them home, so we didn't get shower mats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the way we started out with carpet work first, no yarn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gradually we had money so we could add the rest and then charge a little fee. But it began very simply like that. And that went on for quite a few years before we did that. We didn't do tie-dyeing, but we did the embroidery and we did the weaving. And so the first loom was up in my basement. Then we moved it upstairs. And then finally we moved the loom over to 10. Well, that's too far for people to walk. Then it went to the hospital center. And people wanted to weave in the night. Well, that woke people up that were in there. So then Koinonia got built, so we moved it down there.
You must be amazed with all the looms we have now.
Right. And for 1 year, I forget who the family was here. He was a carpenter, and they made their own looms, and they could take it home.
Wow.
So the first looms went out. The Alainik loom, the two harness ones, went home if people wanted to take their own.
Mm-hmm.
So we begin with that. And then we had all this food, and I remember that began up here too, that we started drying fruit.
Oh.
And they had certain kind of stuff, but anyway, that's what people took on their hikes.
Mm-hmm.
So and with the cherries and apricots and all that's available, apples, we dried things so they could take dried food on their hikes.
Hmm.
And that began everybody, you know, if you had a stove or something, you know, you put it out in the sun and dried it. So that became the first foods like that.
Mm-hmm. So what about the nature walk part?
Well, I was in the sewing, you know, the weaving got so big, we had people come and help with it.
Mm-hmm.
They finally said, you're going to lead the nature walks. And I said, I am not a botanist. I don't know anything about it. They said, you're going to do it. Well, I went down and read books that I could to try to learn. I made lots of mistakes in the beginning, but I started with it. And, then we cut the... just out on the hikes, you know, but then they finally cut this trail back here.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck Anderson, that just left today, was one of them that was on. I went out for supplies because my husband and I had started the coffees.
Come on in, Nick.
And so I needed supplies. And Marcella, this woman who owned the Parkway Motel, was real good about telling me we can go out and pick apricots. This is the season for cherries. So she'd notify me, and I would go out and buy this. And we did it on our own. It's our gift to Holden, was to have these coffees and get this stuff up here. Well, finally, guests were so wonderful that they just started bringing in, like, cheeses and that kind of stuff to help me. But I made those simple crackers, which I still make up here. You know, now today you can get them. It was things that were simple and easy to do. And finally became a recipe, you know, what people want.
But they cut the trail back here and then...
Right. Well, Chuck Anderson was on the boat and he said, are there any jobs for Holden? I was coming back with the fruit and I said, oh, yes, I need help on the nature trail. We can't even get... It wasn't even there. We couldn't even get through to anything. And when they redid Koinonia, things were chopped down, and the first Hobbit house they built, and I thought it was an outdoor toilet, and I thought, they don't need that so close to the village. Well, anyway, Chuck was here, and when they chopped down trees for cleaning, a lot of them fell, and so he went out. I said, we need to have help, have clear nature trail. And so he worked for days, and this partner that was with him on the boat. And it rained for 3 days, and I went to him and I said, what have you been doing in the rain? And he said, the nature trail, and it'll be done tomorrow. Oh. So we dedicated the nature trail. And first you had to walk on logs, and he built 7 bridges because of the trees they'd cut down in the flooding, mm-hmm. swamp that was there. He still does, you know, he didn't go this year, but he still repairs what's there. We built 7 bridges to begin with on that nature trail. Well, my reading up on botany, and they also asked me, will you do the flowers on the table? And I was glad for anything that was growing. So I would go out to the miners' village, pick flowers all over out there because things were still growing from when the miners were there. I picked all kinds of stuff. And now they're considered an obnoxious weed. But I was just glad for anything that was blooming and colorful to put on the tables. We also made vases to put on the tables in the pot shop. And we made them a certain way so it would be a low neck, so the flowers would fit in, big bowl at the bottom so it would hold water. Mm-hmm. And they were not to take them off the tables. People end up taking souvenirs, you know. So once in a while I'd find one stolen and put in a tag box out here. I thought, oh, they had conscience bother them, so they put it back. But now, you know, you can't find all of them. In the wintertime, sometimes they move the vases up to their shelleys and forget to bring them back. But they belonged here and were made for the dining room. Mm-hmm. Then I was to lead the nature walk. So I would take people all over, take them out there. You could pick flowers and so on. But I had to keep flowers on the table all the time. So I was out every day picking up fresh flowers. Well, I went clear down to 10 Mile Falls. By the way, I went down to 10 Mile Falls every morning when my husband played chimes in the morning. And his idea was to make you aware of the blessings of another day. This is why we had the chimes. Mm-hmm. And he'd always let you know what the weather was. You had 5 minutes to get up and dress afterwards, go to work. And he would play, let it snow. Or if it was raining, he'd say, it's raining, it's pouring, the old man's snoring. And then he'd play a piece besides the Edelweiss or, you know. Mm-hmm. So I always knew. But when he would do that, I would go down 10 Mile Falls and back before he got to playing for breakfast. And I just loved going down there, sit on the rock, thank God for my being here. Mm-hmm. That was my morning ritual to do that. Well, sometimes the flowers got scarce. I went down the road to pick flowers, and I found lots. I usually brought a plastic bag with me with wet paper towels on because I couldn't carry water with me, so I'd have something wet to put around what I found. And you found just loads of. You don't walk. You ride the bus up, and you don't see all those flowers on the way. Just found all kinds of stuff, like ocean spray, tiger lilies. Scarlet Julia, and just choice. Mm-hmm. Well, I would walk down as far as where the falls is. I don't know how many miles, but it's about 5 miles down the road.
It's a long way.
And I would be so hot. And at that time, the buses went down with people to get them. I mean, they went down, brought people down and then up. And I would go between the buses when I knew nobody was on the road. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is when I found out about the falls. And I'd be so hot sometimes when I got there, and this wonderful falls is there. And I usually had some kind of stuff to eat. So I would finally decide I can take a shower here between the buses. They weren't jogging then. So I did, and the only people I've gotten to take a shower was June. Uh-huh. June did one, and one of the Gamrath girls. Uh-huh. Nobody else has taken a shower with me. Uh-huh. They still call it Gertrude's shower. But it's delightful. Uh-huh. You know, and it was back far enough that I was hidden. Uh-huh. You know, I could undress, take a real shower while I was down there.
And then they pick you up on the way?
Oh, yeah. Then I'd come back up. And I'd have my flowers picked and be refreshed and fresh flowers. And learned a lot about what ones are flammable and like the snow bush and it's oily. Uh-huh. You know, but that's one that's very fragrant that you smell when you're walking by. Mm-hmm. Ocean spray was another one down there, which you didn't find right here. Mm-hmm. And then I just learned through the years, you know, what's here, the deposits from the trees, like the seed pods off the cottonwoods, what's fragrant. You think it's pine all the time, but it's the cottonwood. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, every little thing like that was some benefit of all that. Mm-hmm. And so I learned much from picking the flowers. But I've had embarrassing things happen because I told Roxanne, she said, well, she's trying to get, she's written the book on flowers. And she said, well, it's not native, and the whole state of Washington's getting, trying to get rid of plants that are considered obnoxious. And my first conversation, I'm telling you personal stories now, I'm going to put this up. But I said to Roxanne, if you're going to be that pure, I don't belong here either. I'm not native. Then she came out with her book, and I brought it down for her. I bought the book and had her autograph it. She said, you took me on my first nature walk so many years ago. And I thought, oh, my goodness. Yeah. Now, she's famous for her art and still comes here and moves out what she doesn't like. And Bevy's Best shouldn't be here. Foxglove shouldn't be here. They have their benefits. Mm-hmm. They don't belong here. Mm-hmm. And I said, you can't help what the birds and the wind brings in. Mm-hmm. You can't do that all the time. Mm-hmm. But the snapdragons, you know, the butternecks is not supposed to be here. Baby's not supposed to be here. Get rid of those. Foxgloves, poisonous. And I said, I'm just glad for anything that's blooming. Mm-hmm. You know, I was responsible for the table, so I picked, and I still have a hard time with that. The wind brings a lot in. The birds bring it in. Mm-hmm. So I'm not so bothered about whether it's native or not.
But anyway, so you started the nature walks. You started the hostai. You started the crafts program. You started Sunday coffee time. Is there anything else that you can think of that you still see happening here?
No, just urgency that people take sabbaticals.
Ah.
That was an important thing to me.
Yes.
Take the risk. Take that leap of faith and go.
Yes, and actually that's something we're trying to revitalize right now is more opportunities for sabbaticals.
Right.
I want to make sure that Christiana and Nick also have a chance. You've been here with Gertrude a number of times. Is there any story, a favorite story, that either of you have about your grandmother that you remember or that you really cherish in terms of how it's influenced your coming?
Well, I don't know of a specific story. I just remember, you know, she keeps claiming that she was very shy when she was younger. And neither of us really believe this, because when she comes here, you know, we have this experience where you can't walk 10 feet in any direction without stopping to talk to somebody else.
Also, seen down in Louisiana too, when they go to the concerts and stuff.
You got to allow a lot of extra time to get from one place to another because she stops and talks.
Well, one thing that happened that, you know, I have been very quiet and very shy all my life. But one of the first summers we were here, Rudy was here, Dr. Bergenoff, our college president, was here, and Beanie was here. All three men, they said, you Augustana men are so quiet, and your wives talk all the time. And I said, well, I'm just having defense. You know, he doesn't say it, so I butt in, and I don't think I talk all the time, but after that I felt, I guess I do.
Well, I think one of my favorite memories of you, Gertrude, was the night of the anniversary ball when we celebrated our 40th anniversary, and you got a beautiful blue kind of satiny gown.
I was wearing it today. You know, it's too cold. Yes. And I wore it to church this morning. Oh, well, I wore it last night too, didn't I? I wore it last night.
I didn't.
No, you didn't wear a dress last night.
No, I didn't wear the dress, but I wore the scarf for me.
Right.
Yeah.
But you had this beautiful blue gown on, but you put a corset on the outside of the gown, and you came in through the archway, and you had an arrangement, I can't remember who it was at the time, that sang Embraceable You as you came in, making a very grand entrance. It's very hard to think that that same woman was once shy.
Well, Beanie had a back problem. You know, he was a polio abortion, so he was wearing a brace. I had also had back problems. So we both had braces. So, and I had this dress that was, it's a beautiful one. I still have it. It was made in Guatemala. So I decided when the anniversary come up, I'm going to wear that dress again up here. But originally, it was a talent show. And Beanie and I, both with our braces on, and me with this long dress, walked across the stage while Doris Edmond played Embraceable You on the piano. And our kids were mortified, and they got up and walked out. That's why when the anniversary was again, I decided to wear the dress. I still have it. Doris isn't here, but I asked, what's his name that plays the accordion? It's on the board.
Oh, it Norm. Was Norm.
Yeah. Metzler?
Metzler, yeah.
Okay, I said, can you play Embraceable You on the piano? He said, sure. So yes. I told him what I was going to do. So he played the piano, and I wore the same dress, and not the same brace, but I had a wraparound one that I put on here. And I walked in that door.
Yes.
The beginning of the Village Center, and got up to the fan and asked if anybody was here remembered when Doris, when Beanie and I walked across the stage and Doris played Embraceable You.
Uh-huh.
I think there were four people mm-hmm. or something like that had been here that year. But I remember how my our kids were. Oh, they were so embarrassed.
Oh, dear.
Nick, how about you? Is there a special memory that you have? Or?
Oh, gosh. You know, when we were really little, the first time I came up here was when I was 9, I think. When we were little, I kept hearing about Old, both from you and I think from my parents. And never, it was quite clear when I was really young what it was. It was just one of those places that people talked about. And because we have an aunt in Sweden, because they talked about that too a lot, and visiting, you know, our aunt in Sweden and people there, I sort of thought that Holden Village was in Europe. But, you know, I guess that just sort of illustrates that it's kind of been a presence even before I was here.
Uh-huh.
They also let you work in the snack bar before you were old enough to help.
Well, what the rules were back then, but I was a cashier when I
used to go and sit and take people's money.
Yeah. So Gertrude, what do you hope for the future of Holden? What are, you know, in terms of not only the memories, but what do you...
Well, I think it's not surprising to me that it affects people, but most of the new people that come in and say, oh, what a place. And they're coming back. And that's happened over and over again this summer.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where they come from, Omaha, Connecticut, boy, you know, it's worth coming out to. It's just mm-hmm. different than anything you've ever experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they still wonder about this at home. Are you going again? And I think it's in part of you. You just can't keep away from it if you have an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way of knowing what community is, simplified living, doing more with less. You don't have to have lots of stuff. I remember it bothered me when I first came home. The family all went to work. Mom, I'm back in the house and having to do homework again. I mean, the house cleaning and go shopping. It was hard for me to adjust to after the first year. So,
uh-huh.
You know, you're going to resume all those activities. And try to stay away from it. I've changed my way of living part of because of it. Now, I don't need that anymore. And I'm feeling that way more and more
mm-hmm.
as I age. And
mm-hmm.
I can live in one room if I have to. Done it before.
There's another experience that I know that you had at Holden, because when I first met you, it was when you were going to go off the board as sort of a board emeritus person, and you told me that maybe you weren't going to be coming back to Holden, and that was 4 years ago, and I understand that maybe 10, 11, 12 years ago you had a scare here that you wound up being evacuated.
Well, I always have a physical before I come out here. And I had gone to the doctor, one who I've gone to for years, and she said, your heart sounds like a sawing logs.
Hmm.
So told me to go see the specialist, so I did. And he put me on, he said, yeah, it's loud. And I thought, I don't know what that's from. I couldn't remember any illness particularly, but he said, yeah. He put me on a drug called Inderol. And I was stupid and didn't ask other side effects. And so I should have had a diuretic with it. So all the way out here, driving out here and everything, I was using this just to keep a steady heartbeat. I didn't even feel it myself, you know, but I knew it was there. And so it was a daily dose I was taking. And I got here. We hadn't even moved into the chalet yet, and I passed out.
Hmm.
And people who were here and knew me thought I looked sort of puffy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wasn't aware of it myself. But I passed out. And so they had to call helicopter rescue. And at that time, the helicopter hadn't been in here much. They landed right down by Lodge 6. So everybody saw this evacuation. And on the way in, there were paramedics here, and Judy Jansen was one. And they apparently gave orders from the hospital, give her a double shot of Lasix. And we were in, riding the helicopter into the Wenatchee to the hospital. And I lost 18 pounds of fluid before midnight.
Wow.
And if I hadn't been here, I wouldn't be alive today. Hmm. Holden saved my life from that, getting that immediate rescue. And you said, they don't want you to come with a lot of problems, so on. But if something happens, there's medical people there, evacuation teams there. This is what can happen to you while you're there. Well, the news spread, and people came. I didn't go down to work for them for a whole month. We thought we should go home, and John Schramm had just started. This was 78, and he said, no, you're going to stay here. We need Beanie, too, and you're just going to stay here. So I stayed up in the chalet for a month before they said, you can go down. And they used to send up food and make crazy things, you know, make me feel welcome. I had been here enough that the kids knew they shouldn't pick flowers. They wondered if they could pick flowers and bring up to me. Mm. And they'd send food up in crazy packages and so forth. And I forget who brought me down for the first meeting when I was able to go to stuff. But it was, you know, I didn't feel it physically otherwise. Mm-hmm. But it was scary. And when guests came in, they said, oh, we read about you. And I said, read about me? And they said, well, it was in the newspapers about the need for helicopter rescue in the mountains. So it started the trend. Well, now they land up on the Talix.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now they rescued you.
They did.
Okay.
They did.
Same thing happened to
and
you.
And I'm grateful, too.
Right.
Yes.
So, well, and I don't encourage people if they have serious illness, you know, to come, because it's hiking is not easy and so on. Mm-hmm. But we've had hiking club people come here who are in their, you know, they're all elderly. Mm-hmm. And they plan their trips. I showed slides to them, and they came out here, and everybody expected them to get off the bus to go hiking. Well, a lot of them were disabled like me. They'd seen my slides and so forth. So they've invited me to how many went out here? We ran into one. You ran into one when you were here in the high school.
Yeah.
And she wrote me, and she said, your grandson's here.
Working in the bookstore.
In the bookstore, right. So they have memories from being here, too, with the hiking club. Mm-hmm. You know, that's an important group in our area because they hike all over the country. Mm-hmm. So you got in on, you know, what the importance of all that was. And here she was working in the bookstore. I ran into her again this summer. Mm-hmm. And, of course, she remembers, you know, she was out here with the hiking club. You know? So, I mean, those things just stay with you.
They do.
Right. And I just say I would not be here if it hadn't been for Holden that rescued me on that heart. I was ready to sue the doctor because he's a specialist, but I thought, I won't get anywhere with that. I never bought it, but it was expensive to be hauled out of here, and I was in the hospital 10 days before I came. And that's when I, what was I going to say about that? I don't remember.
Well, Gertrude, we don't have very much time left, but is there any kind of last story or memory that's really precious to you that we could capture?
Oh, I wanted to tell about Bob Quillo. Mm. He was still a member of the board. And he was the one, after my husband died, I thought, I'm here because of him. And Bob Quillo told the board they should call me anyway. So the telephone calls came. I should come back. And that's why I've been here these years. It was Bob Quillo that suggested to the board. And I think Carol Nolte was on the board, and I'd known her for years. She went to our college and so forth. And she said, well, she's in hospitality because of the coffees I had. So I was not a member of the board, but I was here every time the board met. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just an advisor, and if I think something's wrong, I've written the board. Mm-hmm. So, and you've experienced that. complaints I get, so I tell the board off.
Yes.
And when I thought they'd cut the whole village up making apartments, that is not what we were. So I wrote to the board then, and I said, that's not Holden. We are one community. We all live alike. We don't own any buildings. You have privacy of a bathroom, and that's it. You share the rest of your house. Mm-hmm. And that kind of cooperative, well, I've been real impressed with what even the Japanese people came and said, Holden is like heaven ought to be, or heaven is like Holden ought to be. You know, it was an exchange there, and that got published, you know, like
yes.
Newsweek.
Yes.
Well, those are important symbols to me, and what community support means.
Well, I think that you really embody this great sense of hospitality and generosity and passion about issues. Whenever you come, I feel like I better get to a session because you're going to ask me if I've gone. So I just want to...
Checking up on you.
I just really...
I'm already worried about who's going to replace you.
Well, they're all looking...
It's got to be people who've been here that understand this place, even if Horty says you can't. Well, after the incident when I wrote...
About the Partons.
Yeah, apartments. Martin Wells took the group up the hill and he says, we're not cutting any more apartments. Mm. You know, they realize what that does. It separated community. Mm-hmm. And this is why Janet moved out on me. Mm-hmm. She was with me first and seventh. She said, I'm not going to live in this apartment living. Mm-hmm. So it does have it affects the community. And I can understand why you say, well, this is like heaven ought to be. Mm-hmm. We're all here together. And remember the importance of, they don't care if you have two PhDs, you're a bishop, you're going to wash pots and pans. I remember that so well when that happened, and we told the people. And one man was here from England. He was on the teaching staff. And he said, oh, I'm not doing that. And they said, oh, yes, you are. They don't care if you're bishop or you're two PhDs. You're going to live like everybody else here. And that was Carol Hindley. We're all equal in God's kingdom. We've got to have garbage taken care of, or we wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most important jobs here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to appear for your session all the time, but you better clean up this place.
Gertrude, thank you very much. I really appreciate your willingness to
now come
let
out,
us take
cut
some
out
thoughts.
What shouldn't be there.
And it's really, I think it's a special blessing seeing your grandchildren here, just kind of carrying on a commitment to Holden.
The only thing I've wanted, you know, I've loved the nature part. I said, that's what I wish in the earth sciences. Social issues come and go. But nature stays pretty much itself. Mm-hmm. There are things to do and caring for it. So mm-hmm. I've been wishing some of my grandchildren would go into the natural sciences.
Okay,
well, maybe they will.
Thank
but
you.
But other fields are important too. We've got to have ministry. We've got to have teachers. You know, just being part of the community is important to me. That they've been here. They know what I'm talking about.
Well, it's a delight to have you back every year, and I hope you'll still be here for our 50th anniversary. That's not too many years from now. But thank you very much, and that's the end of the tape.
Okay. Please.